Well, welcome, folks. My name is Jeff Novak. I'm a soil scientist with the ARS. I, along with David Laird, will be acting as moderators for this session. I presented a talk last year in Houston and was amazed at how many folks attended that talk and that session in general. I suggested to Jim Ippolito that we should have a biochar symposium, and it picked up very rapidly. We had many people make suggestions as to what topics they wanted to talk on. If you look at your book, we have a range of biochar effects on soils, including fertility, processing, and on earthworms, which I'm especially interested in hearing. I'm also the first speaker. Dave is the second speaker. I will be handling the first part of this eight speakers. Dave will be handling after the break. We intend to keep on time. At approximately 10 minutes into the presentation, I will stand up. Since I'm 6'4", I think you'll kind of know that I'm imposing on this person to wrap up the presentation. David, would you please do the same for me if I go longer than that?
I'm not 6'4".
Well, I understand.
I'll stand on the chair.
Are there any questions before we start? There's water in the back for the speakers. Well, since I have a few minutes, I'm going to start here. First, I'd like to acknowledge that the funds for this research has come from the GraceNet organization, which has been very gracious to provide us money that we were able to direct into the Grace the biochar program. I spoke last year on the concept of designer biochar, and based upon the information I had at hand, found out some interesting results. Since then, we have refined our topics and have looked at the creation of a designer biochar, which is basically biochars produced under different conditions and how they will be able to affect selected properties in the soil. To be able to do this, I assembled a huge team to work on this series of incubations through this past summer. We have a lot of folks from the ARS and the UGA, and these folks were selected based upon particular items that we were concerned with about the biochar. Nitrogen chemistry, the nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy that was done, additionally some of the other surface properties that I can't measure at the lab, etc. This has been a very enjoyable experience to work with these folks. We hope to have several papers coming out from this. To start off with a very brief introduction, the soils in the coastal plain have been weathered extensively between 1 and 5 million years. Consequently, they are very low in fertility and low in organic carbon. I would like to show a typical example of that with the Norfolk series here. This is a traditional soil that's used for agriculture in the coastal plain for over 100 years. After high temperatures and continuous disc tillage, you'll see that the carbon contents are mostly in the surface and drop dramatically with depth. 0.39 is kind of typical for a soil that's been extensively weathered. Now, we have been looking at management practices other than biochar to increase carbon in the profile using tillage, no-till, and also crop management strategies. We have found some success there, but the success is transitory. The carbon has been enriched in the surface 5 centimeters if you go to no-till, and if you go to a crop rotation where you add a lot of organic carbon back to the soil, very low amounts of that carbon contribute to the low-term carbon pool. So we have been looking for an additional mechanism to try to get carbon back in these soils to rebuild the fertility. Approximately 20 years ago, by investigating some past, many years ago, the Terra Preta and seeing how that was done, we looked at the concept of trying to take some of that technology and apply it to our soils here, like many here at the conference. Acquire some biochar, throw it on your soil, and see what it does. Well, we have been doing this through a series of incubation experiments, and we have found a lot of different things that I would like to tell you. What you see here is an example of the Norfolk loamy sand without any biochar. Here you could see the biochar basically enmeshed in the soil fabric and almost causing the soil to turn black at certain colors. As to repeat myself, we are believing in the concept of designer chars, and what I mean by that is that the feedstock and the can be selected and the temperature of pyrolysis can be selected to deliver a biochar that has specific chemical properties. But before you do that, you have to know what property in the soil that you would want to solve. Do you have a carbon problem? Do you have a fertility problem? Do you have a physical problem? If you know those beforehand, you can then go back and look at the effects of the pyrolytic conditions and the feedstock to create a char that can target a selective chemical property. We have more results to show that this concept has merit, and to be able to do that, I created a brief methods here where we worked with switchgrass as one of our feedstocks. We'd use the traditional pyrolyzer here, a Lindbergh oven. We produced a designer char. We've published a method where we can evaluate those chars in little 4-inch flower pots with approximately 500 grams of soil. And here is a picture of one of those poultry leader. You could see that at 2%, it turned the soil semi-black to a brown. I would like to explain what we did to get these chars with the different qualities. Basically, we looked at differences in the feedstocks, and then once the feedstocks were obtained, we pyrolysized them at different temperatures. Why did we choose that approach? Well, if you go to the literature, you'll see through Antal's work plus several of the other Europeans, 250 to 400 degrees is a critical range for hemicellulose and cellulose breakdown and its removal as bio-oil. So what you're removing here is that you're removing the critical plant parts that I consider important for substrates for organisms. But if you're making bio-oil, you want to take some of that hydrogen and oxygen out if that's your goal. So depending upon what your goal here is, this is, will be your selection of your pyrolytic temperature. Now, as you would expect, if you're pyrolysizing at a lower temperature, you have more biochar recovered. That's another critical thing. Do I have to put 2 kilograms in and I only get 800 grams out? Blah, blah, blah. So that's something to consider. Now, high temperature is very good if you want to get quite a bit of bio oil, or if you want to create a high amount of aromatic character in your biochar. That happens because you end up losing some of your carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. You fuse some of the rings. You form those semi-graphene sheets. And a problem with that is that less biochar is recovered. Now, the majority that I've chatted with of the companies are using a fast or a flash pyrolysis, which essentially is a few seconds pyrolysis of the feedstock, and it produces large tonnages per day. This is a major hang-up if you're trying to acquire large quantities to field apply, but if you are interested in doing field work with biochars, most times you'll end up getting chars that have been flashed produced, simply because there's a lot of it available. Some of this information here has been shown at Boulder. I'm going to give a brief overview of it again. This is available on the internet if you go to the North American Biochar website and look at that presentation. We worked with 5 feedstocks, peanut hull, pecan shells, poultry litter, and switchgrass. Here is the particular temperatures that we worked with. As we said on the previous slide, if you pyrolysize at lower temperatures, you'll see that you get a little bit more carbon recovered, particularly here with poultry litter and switchgrass. Now, as we said before, higher temperatures, you're driving off the volatile material, which is being collected as bio-oil. But what shocked us in this is what happens to the pH of the material that as you increase pyrolysis temperatures. This was our first indication that we needed to be careful here, because look at the pHs of the poultry litter, 10 and 8.7. And as I was recorded in North America, this is a very critical aspect for the biochar quality. I heard through some feedback, I look like Moses when I said, do not put an alkaline biochar on an alkaline soil. I still believe that. That is a simple base soils 101 concept. We will show you what happens, though, once we put the poultry litter char on there. Also, SeaQuest we worked with, you could see that it has a pH of on about 5.7 and some of the surface areas here. The surface area measurements were quite controversial at the Boulder meeting simply because of the fact that they weren't really acceptable because of some method issues, but I won't go into that. But generally from the literature, as you pyrolysize, you get higher surface area, which is another important property for those who are looking at polar sorption reactions. This also was presented in Boulder. I'll go over it briefly, but you could see here with the peanut hull and the pecan shell that as you pyrolysize at higher temperatures, you tend to concentrate the ash because you're driving off the carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Particularly with the poultry litter, notice your material has half of the material is ash. If you're looking for a biochar that has a lot of carbon, you'll see here after 700 degrees, you get almost 91% carbon. But that comes at the expense of losing some of these other elements. So this is another critical feature that a person would want to be aware of when they're making their chars. Additionally, we're going to report the sodium and the phosphorus here because we'll see how that became a very important property of one of these chars through the incubation. When I was in Boulder, I presented T0 material, as I arbitrarily called it, basically putting the char in the soil, waiting a couple hours, attempting to stop the reaction by drying the soil out and just seeing what it did quickly to the soil. Ensuing, I'm able to report what did the data look like after we completed the experiment. This data was not presented in Boulder, so it is new. Over the 120-day incubation, you'll notice that we leached it 4 times with deionized water. This essentially was to leach 100% of what we consider the pore spaces to acquire the leachate, see what the chemistry of the leachate was as a function of time, if any of that material was leaching out or still remaining in the soil. And you'll see here with the soil alone that not much happened. Now I specifically picked the poultry litter to let you see that at T0, when I was on stage a few months ago, I would say a person would never create a soil with 1600 parts per million phosphorus. That's counterintuitive. That shouldn't be done. But we ended up doing it anyway by applying approximately 20 milligrams per kilogram. Now, there was some hope, though, that by the leachings we would be able to leach out the sodium. You'll see here that we could leach out a fair amount at the low temperature char, but with the high temperature char, the salts were still in the soil. Okay, this is a critical feature that we're working with now. But in our lab, we're trying to turn this negative into a positive. Can we turn the nutrients that's in the poultry char to make it a slow-release fertilizer by looking at blends? So we have some future plans with the poultry litter. SeaQuest I included here to show that it didn't really harm the soil after the 128 days of incubation. Now, one of the other startling things to happen here, at least for myself, but if you go back to the literature, you find that it is explainable. My colleagues took some of the T0 soil and did a phosphate borate extraction for extractable nitrogen. They also repeated it with dilute NaOH, and they do have the KCl data, but I don't have that available for the presentation. Now, as you would expect, as the pH of the biochar increases, the amount of nitrogen extractable decreased, and that can be explained either through volatilization or through to the sorption of some of the ammonium to the increase in the negative sites. My colleagues are looking at the formation of ammonia gas to verify that mechanism. I don't have those results, but it's a speculation. But the key feature here is that if you're going to put biochar on soils that have a high pH in them, you're going to temporarily upset the nitrogen cycle, which was brought about by the pH effect and has been noted by several speakers at Boulder. So this appears to be nothing new, but yet again, look at the dramatic effect. No nitrogen extracted out of the poultry litter treated material, at least at T0 time. We're still developing this. These are, again, preliminary results. Now, one of the other things that really startled us is when we were doing this incubation experiment, we noticed that after the watering, some of the pots remained wet, others stayed or dried out really fast. So we're looking at the pots and we're going, all right, what's going on here? So after the first leaching here, we decided to take and just simply measure the gravimetric weights of the pots. Very simple measurements, nothing high tech. So if you look here, right before we leached them, they had what you would expect for a loamy sand soil, water contents between 2 and 4%. Now, as I said, we leached them with 1.2 pore volumes. We let them freely drain after 30 hours. Okay, that's where we get the data here, almost up to two days. Then we started measuring the weights of the pots as a function of time. We went out to 11 days simply to allow sufficient time for those soils to get down to what they were at the beginning and then eventually probe them for soil strength readings. But what I would ask you to notice here is that under the low temperature chars, here's the control and here are the four chars. So you could see that it improved the soil moisture retention a little bit. But what startled us was with the high temperature chars, the switchgrass almost doubled the amount of water that could be held in that loamy sand. And what's more important for us is that that water was available for a longer period of time. Okay, now this slide also shows that the Sequest did a commendable job also, but some of these other biochars didn't do as well. So again, feedstock selection and temperature pyrolysis can have a very big effect on a soil physical property. Very simple. Now, to look at some of the statistics of that, we took and we normalized everything to 2 and 6 days. And this is only for the first leaching with the four pots that were used. If you look for the soils alone, it's about 2, 3%. See here, 19, and would then eventually dried out to 9.6. Okay, that's about normal. Poultry litter gave you a little bit more water, but again, it wasn't very significantly different. But now look at the switchgrass. And I have said several times to my colleagues that I have doubled the water holding capacity of this loamy sand by putting in 2% biochar that was switchgrass at high temperature. Look here, 19.9 versus 9.6. That's a huge amount of water there. You also see it's significantly different. The Sequest also did a commendable job. In fact, that was surprising for me because this is a hardwood material which had properties that I didn't think would affect the water holding capacity that much. But the take-home message here, folks, is the temperature and the feedstock selection gives you pretty different results. Okay, to wrap this up, I would like to point out that this is an SEM of the pecan shell biochar. You'll see that it has very jagged edges. Here we have an aggregate out of the Norfolk loamy sand with these little things that look like Oreo cookies. You'll see that they just basically stick out. Okay. We have also looked at other pictures, and the biochars adhere differently to the soil. We're interested in that from forming aggregates, but I don't have any of that data to talk to you about. To wrap this talk up, higher temperature pyrolysis results in lower recoveries, greater surface areas. Here's a very critical issue, pH and ash contents. Ash contents now is becoming to a forefront because folks want to know, does the ash affect the basicity of the soil? What are some of the measurements that I could measure out of that to come up with the characteristics for the different biochars? Also, produced at higher temperatures, we showed that it increases the pH, influences the nitrogen availability, and one type of char here caused some problems with sodium and phosphorus. So additionally, you'll see that the water holding capacity varied quite a bit, and for the skeptics in the audience, that was shown through the four leachings in that one experiment, and since we didn't believe it, we reproduced it in another two soils collected from Idaho. We found the same effect. That switchgrass biochar was able to increase the water holding capacity, three different series, one loamy sand, the other two silt loams. To wrap it up here, and this is the take-home message, biochars can be designed to have specific qualities, and with that, David is indicating that it's time to stop. So I'm sorry for the briefness of this, but you'll find some of this information on the webpage for the North American Biochar Conference under the production link. And I'll thank you very much, and I'll entertain any questions. Sequest is the trade name given to the Canadian company Dynamotive that produced their biochar. The ARS has a cooperative agreement with them to do some field evaluations. I chose to do some laboratory evaluations to see what it can do. It worked pretty well. Yes, sir?
What weight does this biochar add in terms of tons of char per hectare?
That's a very good question, and I'm probably going to get yelled at for that. But we put in 2%, which equates to approximately 40 to 44 metric tons per hectare. Now, that sounds like a lot, but you look at some of the application rates I've seen on posters, and I've seen as high as 80 used in some experiments.
In the field?
In the field. So when I mentioned to folks they would need to put on 40, they kind of look at me and their heads roll because of the expense. Yeah, the expense. That's another very good question, and I've seen the range of biochar production, a ton, to be as low as 5 to be as high as 200. And the reason for the difference is it determines by how much that person can make a profit from the heat. If they can make quite a bit of money from the heat in the pyrolysis process, the residual char would be a little cheaper. Tom Mills, if you go to that North American web page, has a presentation on that, and he talked about $200 a ton.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts about the increase, the drastic increase in male phosphorus? Do you have any hypotheses as to why that's happening?
Yes, it goes back to what is excreted from the animal. The poultry litter here, to meet their pee requirement, they give it a little bit more pee. The animal doesn't assimilate that. Approximately half of it comes out into the poultry litter waste.
But did you not see that with the other biochars as well? Not to the same extent.
No. Those are feedstocks that were used from other crops. The pea content is determined by the normal pea uptake rate of the plant. Yes, sir.
Did you notice any change in the water infiltration rate with the
That was something that we would like to have looked at, but we were not able to through this experiment.
But visually, water?
Yes, we've seen quite a bit differences visually. I'm sorry, I need to wrap up. Thanks, Dave. Our next speaker is David Laird.